Lions, you know, especially in the second half of the season. This season, really, really struggling, especially after that injury. You know, I bet there's not a day that goes by since that week two Houston game when Mayfield threw the interception and, you know, tried to make that tackle and hurt his left shoulder, you know, that that he doesn't regret doing that, because he. What's up, guys? This is Justin Coffin for the 330 Sports Show. We are a Youngstown studio production. Today is Tuesday, November 23rd, 2021. We are on social media at 330 Sports Show. Also, make sure to like and subscribe to Youngstown Studio on their Facebook and YouTube channels. All right, let's start with kind of the ugly from the weekend. Even though it was a win, the Browns beat the Lions 13-10. It, you know, the game was about as ugly as the weather was outside. But, you know, they get by the Lions. A win is a win. Get to 6-5. We're going to get to sort of the good and the bad from that game. You know, let's start with Baker Mayfield. He is, you know, he plays the most important position on the field. You know, we're hoping as Browns fans that he is the guy to take us to the next level. Last year showed some promising signs, you know, especially in the second half of the season. This season, really, really struggling, especially after that injury. You know, I bet there's not a day that goes by since that week two Houston game when Mayfield threw the interception and, you know, tried to make that tackle and hurt his left shoulder, you know, that that he doesn't regret doing that, because he has really, really struggled ever since then. You know, so let's just take a look at what he did. And again, not the greatest of conditions on Sunday, but 15 of 29 passing, which is about 52%, 176 yards, one touchdown, but two really, really bad interceptions. One of them specifically, he just way overthrew, had a receiver wide open. On the season, you know, his completion percentage is low. He's throwing for about 216 yards a game. He did miss that Broncos game. So he has 2,166 yards on the season. So 216 yards a game in, you know, I know the Browns are a run heavy team, but he is not lighting it up. Let's just say that on the passing statistics, 10 touchdowns to 6 interceptions, not a great ratio either. And right now, at least entering the game on Sunday, his QBR, which I'll explain a little bit about what that means, coming into Sunday's game was 42.8, which ranked him 25th in the league. So the QBR, let me just, to be simple, say it like this. If an average quarterback would have a score of about a 50, and a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback would have a score of about 75, Baker Mayfield is well below the average score at, you know, roughly 43. So he is just not getting the job done. You know, we've been out without Chubb for a while. We've been out without Hunt for a while. He's missed various tackles, you know, his left and right tackle throughout the season, wide receiver sort of in and out. So there's a lot of excuses, I guess you could make, but, you know, quarterbacks, especially elite level quarterbacks, find the way to get it done. I don't want to put it all on his shoulders, but I do want to say, you know, if he's going to be out there and he's going to be playing, you have to, you know, be more efficient, get the job done, especially when you are a run-heavy team. You got to be able to complete those open throws and move the chains. Let's go to a very bright spot from Sunday. You know, the offensive line really did a nice job. They did protect Mayfield for the most part, but Nick Chubb, 22 rushes, 130 yards, one touchdown, and he also had two catches for 14 yards, and that one touchdown did come as a receiver out of the backfield. You know, so that was really nice to see him, you know, slip out of there. And obviously the last drive of the game, he just really pounded the rock and moved those chains. The Browns were able to get three first downs, all rushing. and, you know, just did a great job. You know, we'll get to his season totals in a little bit, but, you know, for the season, he basically is averaging 6 yards a carry. It's like 5.99, I think, to be exact, but he's doing an amazing job. 7 touchdowns, 1 receiving, 142 carries only. So he should be well rested this back half of the season for 851 yards. And you can see against the Patriots, even though that game was a blowout, we did miss him, you know, as our workhorse back. And when you get Kareem Hunt back with Nick Chubb in the backfield, and then you can spell them here and there with D'Ernest Johnson, the Browns could have something to build upon in the second half here of the season, or at least the back third of the season, I should say. So what I'm left with from this game are some of these lingering questions. What should the Browns do with Baker Mayfield? Let me know, because I really don't have the answers. You know, he has a shoulder injury, a foot injury, a knee injury. Is he injured or is he ineffective? Because, you know, when we see Baker Mayfield at his peak, he looks good. You know, that Cincinnati game, he looked good, but he had the shoulder injury then. And, you know, I don't exactly know what it is, you know, but the Browns have been very, very ineffective. But listen to this number, the final four drives of the game, this is against a very below average Detroit Lions defense. He was 1 of 7 throwing the ball for -1 yard. Not going to do it. Not going to cut it in a passing league, and in a league where you should be, you know, completing at least minimum 60% of your throws. The Browns have scored 17 points or fewer in 5 of the last 6 games. That is just not going to get the job done. You know, they've been able to pick up a couple wins. The defense has picked them up in a few games. But 17 points in the NFL is not going to win you too many games. Questions with the defense. Is the defense good? Sometimes it looks great. Other times it looks really bad. So tells me it kind of is somewhere in between that. The talent is there. You know, you have a star in Myles Garrett, maybe the best player in the NFL, you know, especially on the defensive side of the ball. You have a really good secondary, especially a really good secondary in which you've spent a lot of draft capital in with Greg Newsome a few years ago with Denzel Ward. You have Grant Delpit back there. You know, you have a bunch of dudes. You've brought in Troy Hill, who didn't play in this game. You've brought in John Johnson III. You traded last year for Ronnie Harrison. The Browns have some dudes in the back half of their secondary. And, you know, again, you know, they only gave up 10 points to Detroit, but they, you know, they were playing against the backup quarterback. They still allowed DeAndre Swift to sort of go off in this game, especially, you know, with one huge run. But he was still averaging well over 6 yards a carry besides that big run. And then another lingering question for me is the penalties. The Browns did not seem to be this undisciplined last season. This season, they seem to be extremely undisciplined. A lot of unforced errors, a lot of pre-snap penalties, holdings, formational things, false starts, offsides, stuff like that. And, you know, that's either putting them back behind the chains or giving their opponent some easy down and distances. And, you know, like this game, for example, 10 penalties for 84 yards, not going to cut it. You know, I'm not sure if there was, you know, 2 or 3 other teams besides Detroit that the Browns would have won the game on Sunday. So the Browns really did get lucky with their opponent, but also coming out with a victory on Sunday. So, you know, an effort like that is not going to get it done against the Baltimore Ravens, who they have coming up this coming weekend. So let's take a look at overall what the Browns have done and what's looking forward for them. So right now they are sitting at 6-5. 6-5 in the AFC, you are right in the midst of everything. So, you know, we obviously know what they've done recently, but, you know, maybe you just throw that New England game away and say, you know what, we've won two of our last three. And, you know, but the Browns are the most perfectly inconsistent team this year. You know, you win one, you lose one, you win one, you lose one, you win one. Hopefully they can buck that trend and get a win, a big win against a divisional opponent with the Baltimore Ravens. They have Baltimore Ravens back-to-back games. Now, they will have a bye week in between the first weekend of December, and they need that bye week. They need Kareem Hunt back. They need Jack Conklin back. They need Baker Mayfield to get healthy. They need Jarvis Landry to get healthy. Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah got banged up again this past weekend. So they need their guys to get healthy and be the best versions of themselves. Will Baker be that guy by the end of the season? I don't know. I've never dealt with that kind of injury, but I give him a ton of credit for being tough, but toughness in this league, you know, everybody's tough. Everybody's tough in the NFL. And, you know, you always hear the cliche of your best ability is your availability. Yeah, well, that's all well and good. But if you're only playing 50% of what you can actually do, you know, normally, I know Baker's playing for a contract and this and that, but, you know, Baker has to think of the team first. And, you know, again, I give him a ton of credit, but, you know, I don't know if it's time for Barry or Stefanski or another coach or another front office member to step in and say, hey, you need to sit this week out if you're not 100%, which he's not going to be 100%. So like even 80%, I don't know what the number is, but Baker Mayfield, if he is playing as ineffective as he is, needs to help the team by sitting and let Case Keenum get out there and do something. A small positive, we'll talk more about the Ravens coming up on tomorrow's show, but the Ravens do have one of the worst pass defenses in the NFL. So something to hopefully to look forward to. Maybe you can get some wide receivers back. You know, Donovan Peoples-Jones missed this past game, but, you know, if the Browns can get healthy and get right and, you know, they can pull out a win, they're right back in the thick of things in the AFC North. So let's take a look at what the rest of the teams in the AFC North did. Ravens come back to beat the Bears in the final minute of the game. They win in Chicago. Justin Fields got knocked out of that game with a rib injury. But Baltimore played that entire game without Lamar Jackson. Some sort of illness. I don't exactly know what it is, but you know, I would imagine he'll be back for the Browns. The Steelers and the Chargers played a hell of a game on Sunday night. Steelers came back from 17 points down. They got a blocked punt, you know, just some crazy plays, but the Chargers ended up winning a shootout in LA after the Steelers came from 17 points down. Bengals come up aces in Vegas. They whoop on the Raiders 32-13. Bengals are 6-4. And the Browns, how about this? Browns are 6-5 and in last place in the AFC North, which is just insane. But they are only one win out of, you know, the first place spot, you know, in the wins column behind Baltimore. Baltimore 7-3, Pittsburgh 5-4-1. Cincinnati at 6-4 and the Browns at 6-5. Real quick around the NFL, New England just beat up the Atlanta Falcons on Thursday, 25-0. They now move into first place in the AFC East. The Colts destroy the Buffalo Bills to get back in the playoff race. They're actually 6-5 as well. Buffalo, though, falls to 6-4. And now the one of the prohibited favorites in the AFC has now fallen into second place in its own division behind those New England Patriots. And here's the perfect example of what the NFL is this year, at least in the AFC. It feels like the 1-8, now 2-8, Houston Texans get their second win of the year over the Tennessee Titans, the AFC's current number one seed. They were 8-2 heading into this game, but they win 22-13. They were actually up 19-0 at one point in that game. Minnesota gets to 5-5 with a 34-31 last second win over the Green Bay Packers. the Chiefs defeated the Cowboys. This was a pretty ugly game, to be honest, but they win that game 19-9. Chiefs sort of look like they're figuring it out on the defensive side of the ball. Mahomes still doesn't look quite like himself, but the Chiefs are starting to figure it out a little bit as a team. The Arizona Cardinals moved to 9-2. They won that game without Kyler Murray, without DeAndre Hopkins, but they still win that game 23-13 with a win over the Seahawks, who are really, really struggling this year. Colt McCoy actually was the backup quarterback in that game and got the victory for the Cardinals. The San Francisco 49ers roll over the Jacksonville Jaguars 30-10. That gets them back to 5-5. So they have a shot at the playoffs in the NFC. The NFC is crazy as well. The Eagles dominate the Saints 40-29, a game that really wasn't as close as that score. So let's move on. Let's take a look real quick at the AFC playoff picture. So right now, Tennessee, even still with that loss on Sunday, is still sitting at 8-3. And by the way, we're recording this on Monday night, so ahead of any games. I believe it's an NFC game tonight, but Tennessee at 8-3, Baltimore 7-3, New England at 7-4, and Kansas City at 6-4. Those are your divisional leaders. If the playoffs started today, Cincinnati, the Chargers, and the Bills would be your wild card teams. But like, look at this in the hunt mix: Pittsburgh, Indy, Cleveland, Las Vegas, Denver, and Miami, who is now up to 4-7. I still don't like them to make the playoffs, but I figured they're on a 3-game winning streak. We'll give them credit where credit's due for getting sort of back in the hunt. And real quick, let's take a quick break to tell you real quick about, remind you about our show. Our shows air Tuesdays and Thursdays live at 3:30 or on demand. Anytime we record our shows live, like right now I'm recording virtually, so obviously phone lines are not open, but anytime we're recording live, you can always call in 330-595-1600. Follow us, my show, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and watch on the Youngstown Studio Facebook or YouTube channel. You can also listen anywhere you get your podcasts. All right, let's go to the second half of the show. Ohio State and Michigan State. For if you are a Buckeye fan, this was probably the prettiest game of the year. Ohio State just destroyed Michigan State 56-7 in a game that 56-7 doesn't do it justice to how bad of a beating this was. The Buckeyes put on the team up north, State, in Michigan State, who, by the way, was the 7th-ranked team in the country coming into this game. So let me just give you a few numbers that are just remarkable. First of all, Ohio State moves to 10-1. They have won 9 games in a row, 8-0 in conference. Michigan State drops to 9-2, 6-2 in conference. But Buckeyes scored 7 touchdowns in their 7 first half possessions. So 7-7, 49-0 at the half. They had 500 yards at the half of total offense. The Buckeyes' offensive average is 46.3. points per game coming into this game, and they average roughly about 550 yards per game of offense. And in this game, they scored 56 and racked up 655 total yards of offense. Listen to this by CJ Stroud. CJ Stroud in the first half, 29 of 31, 393 yards, 6 touchdowns, no interceptions. And again, at halftime, just an unbelievable. The nation's leading rusher coming into this game, Kenneth Walker, was held to 6 carries on 25 yards. Chris Olave tied and then broke David Boston's all-time Ohio State receiving record for most touchdowns in a career with 34 for the tie and then 35th for the go-ahead, the record breaker. It was also his senior day, amongst many, many other seniors for Ohio State who have racked up an amazing career. You know, the only maybe nitpicks you can take away from this game, Noah Ruggles, the kicker for Ohio State, missed his first field goal attempt of the season, a 38-yarder, not a huge deal, especially in a game like this. And then our highly touted millionaire NIL deal, backup quarterback or third-string quarterback or fourth-string quarterback, I'm not even sure right now, Quinn Ewers takes his first snap. You know, it was complete garbage time, but still to get him on the field, that shows the coaches are trusting him a little bit more and more as the season goes on. By the way, he should be a senior in high school. He reclassified to the 2021 class when he was supposed to be a 2022 graduate. So let's look at a few more stats here. Ohio State quarterbacks with six touchdown passes in a game that ties the record. C.J. Stroud did it on Saturday. Justin Fields did it once last year. Dwayne Haskins in 2018 did it twice. J.T. Barrett did it in, I have 2016. It's 2014 and 2016. And Kenny Guyton did it in 2013 when he was filling in for Braxton Miller. So all that should show you is since Urban Meyer, since Ryan Day have taken over, you know, the passing game has really, really taken off and skyrocketed because, you know, there was no quarterback in Ohio State history before 2013 with six touchdowns. And now we have, what, five different guys that have done it seven times now. So pretty remarkable numbers. And I have a feeling Stroud could do that again before the season's over. And definitely before his career is over at Ohio State. Michigan State, entering the game, Kenneth Walker. So this is a credit to the Buckeyes defense here and sort of the way the game played out. But coming into this game, Kenneth Walker had 1,498 rushing yards, which was first in the country. 17 rushing touchdowns, which was first in the country. He had forced 80 missed tackles, which was first in the country. Yards after contact, 923, which was first in the country, and he had 19 rushes of 20 or more yards, which was first in the country out of all 130 Division I FBS schools. On Saturday, six carries, four, and I've seen it two different ways. So we're going to give him 26 yards on the day. So that, for the most part, I don't think it completely eliminates his Heisman chances. He might still get to New York, but I don't think there's any shot he can win it now. Let me go in depth a little bit with Urban Meyer and Ryan Day. So through their first 35 games, the exact same win-loss record of 32-3. Their Big Ten record, Urban Meyer was 21-0. Ryan Day is 22-0. Urban Meyer 5-2 versus ranked opponents. Ryan Day 11-2 versus ranked opponents, and Urban Meyer 2-0 in his first couple years versus the team up north. Ryan Day 1-0, not getting that opportunity last year against the team up north because I'm going to say it, they ducked us last year. I think they ducked the game with some guys out with COVID. Let's go a little bit more in depth on C.J. Stroud. So for the game, 32-35, 432 yards, six touchdowns, no interceptions. For the season, 3,468 total yards, 71% completion percentage, 36 touchdowns, five interceptions for the season, which is roughly what, about 7-1 touchdown to interception ratio. Just an amazing, amazing quarterback for especially as a freshman. He is a freshman. Let's not forget that. Chris Olave. Let's start with him. Probably the most one of the most glorified receivers in Ohio State history. Seven catches, 140 yards, two touchdowns on the day. That was Saturday. For the season, 58 catches, 848 yards, and 13 total touchdowns. For his career, 35 touchdowns, 2,000, which by the way, 35 touchdowns first now, as we stated earlier, in Ohio State history, passing David Boston. Career yards now 2,633. He still has an opportunity to get close to the top overall spot, which is Michael Jenkins. He has a ways to go, but he could do it with some big games down the stretch. Career receptions, 169, which puts him third all time. The Ohio State career leader was just a couple years ago, KJ Hill, with 201 for his career. Garrett Wilson, probably the best receiver Ohio State has. And you know, if you're a Cleveland Brown fan, you would love to see either Olave or Wilson. I think Wilson would be a great fit in Cleveland, but it's too early to talk draft. But Garrett Wilson, 7 catches, 126 yards, 2 touchdowns on the day on Saturday. For the season, 60 catches, 939 yards, and 11 touchdowns. He's going to get past that 1,000-yard mark on Saturday and, you know, become the second of the three receivers to get to 1,000 yards, and very, very possibly Olave could get there as well. Jackson Smith and Jigba, number 11, had, again, I mean, this guy is just putting up amazing stats, and he looks like C.J. Stroud's security blanket. 10 catches, 105 yards, 1 touchdown on the day for Saturday. His season receptions, 69 catches for 1,130 yards and 6 touchdowns on the season. Travion Henderson didn't have to do a whole lot in this game. I think he finished with something like 63 yards, but he only had 9 carries. So he is going to be well-rested heading into this coming Saturday's big game for the season. 150 carries. So you break that down over 11 weeks, that's not too bad. 150 carries for nearly 1,100 yards. He has 17 total touchdowns. His next touchdown will tie Maurice Clarett's true freshman record of 18 by a freshman running back, or by any freshman, that is. He has 7.3 yards per carry. He has 18 catches as well in the season for 231 yards. Look real quick at the Big Ten scoreboard. You know, outside of that, Michigan dominated Maryland, getting ready for their, that was kind of a tune-up for this coming weekend, 59-18. Purdue bounces back with a 32-14 win. That was kind of cool because that game was in Wrigley Field in Chicago. So they beat Northwestern. Iowa, 33 over Illinois, 23. Iowa still has a shot to get in the Big Ten championship game. Actually, Iowa, Minnesota, and Wisconsin all still do. You know, there's some tiebreakers there, but basically for Wisconsin, who beat Nebraska in a very tight game, 35-28. If Wisconsin wins, they're in, and they're kind of figuring it out a little bit, both offensively and defensively. They have a 17-year-old running back that he's starting to find his way, and their defense for the most part has been pretty solid on the season. Nebraska, by the way, the best 3-8 team of all time. This team hasn't lost a game by more than 9 points. Ohio State beat them by 9. All their other games are by 7 or 6 or 3 losses or point losses on the season. It's just unbelievable what they've had to go through this year, and their record is not depictive of the kind of team they are. Penn State, dominant defense, beats up Rutgers 28-0, and then Minnesota holds their serve 35-14 over Indiana. Indiana, again, we've talked about them in the past, has had a really, really rough season. So here is what's on deck, what the Buckeyes have in front of them. So obviously, you got the team up north coming in this weekend. Ohio State will travel there to Ann Arbor. And again, I'm recording this Monday night for Tuesday's show. Ohio State in the AP poll has jumped Alabama. They have jumped Oregon now with Oregon's loss, and they are now the number 2 team. Michigan, I believe, still was the number 6 team. I will have to check that out, but I could very well see Michigan being the number 5 team in the college football playoff rankings. And then, this game on Saturday is for the Big Ten East. Whoever wins this game will represent the Big Ten East in Indianapolis. You know, could be Wisconsin most likely if they win, they're in. They do play Minnesota. That'll be a tough game. If Iowa wins and Wisconsin loses, they will be in. There's some sort of tiebreaker with Minnesota too, that they still have a chance. So I don't want to exclude Minnesota, but they have a long shot at getting in. And then whoever wins, you know, especially if they're from the East, will get in the playoff. I don't see a team from the West, if they were to win that game, getting in. So the de facto Big Ten East champion, if they can win the Big Ten title, will represent the Big Ten in the college football playoff. And I believe a one-loss Big Ten team will be the number two seed in the playoff, most likely behind Georgia or however it falls. They're going to be, you know, in that top two, top three mix. So let's take a look real quick at the top 10 from last week. You know, the SEC has a tendency to, you know, give its teams some kind of freebies in the last couple weeks of the season. They Georgia beat Charleston Southern 56-7, same score as the Buckeyes win, but except Charleston Southern is an FBS team or FCS team. So, you know, it is what it is. Alabama won a very tight game over Arkansas, 42-35. You know, Arkansas had an onside kick to, you know, possibly get the ball and recover, but that game was back and forth, and you know, Alabama eventually pulled it away. Oregon, obviously, we know very well as Buckeye fans, you know, beat us earlier, but they had lost to Stanford, and then now they lost to Utah, and they lost bad, 38-7. They lose to Utah in Salt Lake City. That pretty much eliminates Oregon and the Pac-12 from the college football playoff. Mentioned Ohio State, they will move up with probably the most impressive win, maybe on the season, 56-7. Cincinnati wins 48-14. That is a very good win. SMU is not a bad team. Michigan with a big win at Maryland, 59-18. Michigan State, you know what happened to them. They got trounced, so they will drop. Notre Dame wins big, and Notre Dame is a sneaky team as we head late into these college football playoffs. Could they possibly make the college football playoff again? They have a good shot. They're going to move up at least two spots with Michigan State and Oregon losing. So they will be at worst sixth, and you know, they have a shot to get in. So we will see what happens. Oklahoma State with a big win at Texas Tech. Their defense is very, very good. 23-0, they beat Texas Tech. And then Wake Forest, you know, Wake Forest was one of the best offensive teams in the country, you know, this season, but they, you know, Clemson finally got their act together and showed what they could do if they played to their full strength. Clemson wins that game 48-27, which knocks any hope of the ACC out of the college football playoff. So what I think it will be on Tuesday night, and again, these don't necessarily matter this week. They will matter very heavily the first weekend in December. But what I think it will be, I think obviously Georgia's going to stay at one. I think Ohio State jumps up to number two. Alabama will be in the three spot. Cincinnati, I think, moves up to number four. Michigan moves up to number five, Notre Dame to six, Oklahoma State will move up to seven, Baylor to number eight, Oklahoma to number nine, and Ole Miss to number 10. Now, I really don't think past, you know, you have Bedlam coming up this weekend, Oklahoma State and Oklahoma, that will eliminate one of those teams. Ohio State and Michigan, that's a sort of a quarterfinal. You know, one of those two teams will be eliminated. Georgia and Alabama is coming up very soon. That will, you know, not necessarily knock out Georgia, but it could knock out Bama if they lose. It's going to be a wild next 2 weeks of college football, and I'm here for it all. So just, you know, as a Buckeye fan, and Buckeye homer, sort of, you know, I like to think I'm pretty realistic, but I like to think Ohio State has a pretty good shot coming up this weekend and in the Big Ten title game. And if they do, there is an interesting shot that Ohio State and Cincinnati could match up in a 2-3 matchup. I think, and that would be very, very cool to see if that happens. So we will see. Stay tuned for what happens. But again, just take care of your business in front of you. And I, you know, there's no way the Buckeyes are looking past the Wolverines this coming Sunday. What's on the line again, you know, for the Big Ten West? Wisconsin will play Minnesota Saturday at 4. Iowa will know their fate sort of. They will play Nebraska Friday at 1:30. That Black Friday, day after Thanksgiving game at 1:30. That's always kind of a cool matchup. I always like that. Nebraska and Colorado used to play in that game. Now it's Nebraska and Iowa have sort of this newfound rivalry, which is neat. Also this weekend, you get the Egg Bowl on Thanksgiving. Ole Miss and Mississippi State should be a fun one. Two highly ranked teams going at it. You got the Iron Bowl. Alabama is a 19-point favorite. Auburn just isn't very good. However, it's a rivalry game. Auburn has, you know, upset Alabama in the past. So, you know, I'm not completely putting it past them, but I think Alabama probably wins that game. I don't want to say easily, but I think Alabama wins. Notre Dame is at Stanford. Georgia is -35 at Georgia Tech this weekend. Not really a rivalry game there. We got the Civil War, Oregon State at Oregon. So Oregon coming off a loss, we'll see how they respond to that. You got Bedlam, as I mentioned earlier, Oklahoma at Oklahoma State. That's sort of a de facto, we'll put the winner in the Big 12 title game there. And, you know, still an outside shot for the winner to get in the college football playoff. So we will see. Cincinnati is a 13.5-point favorite at Eastern Carolina as well this coming weekend. Now, I will have a Ohio State Michigan preview for you on Wednesday coming up at 3:30. We will also have a Browns Ravens preview on Wednesday. Should be right after that Ohio State Michigan preview. It is Sad and Harbaugh week. Both the Buckeyes, both the Browns will be taking on the Harbaugh brothers. Ohio State taking on Jim, who's the goofier of the two brothers. John, I have a lot of respect for John. I think he is a great NFL coach. However, I hope he loses badly on Sunday night as the Browns take on the Ravens. We will check in on those games. Real quick, explanation of Michigan helmet stickers, I noticed. So you get a sticker if you attended a Harbaugh sleepover on a recruiting visit. If you didn't lose your helmet, you get a sticker for that. If you retrieve Jim Harbaugh's headset after he throws it, you get a sticker for that. If you got a nice clean locker, you know, that's worth a sticker. If you hit a tackling dummy pretty hard, you get one for that. If you didn't quit the team last year after a really rough season, you get a sticker for that. And you get to the stadium in time for practice, also worth a sticker. Pants not backwards, shoes on the correct feet, that deserves another sticker. So if you showed up for the game against the Buckeyes, which they couldn't have done last year, you get a sticker. And if you don't cry against the Buckeyes after the game, you get a sticker. But as of Saturday's game, it will have been 3,654 days since the team up north beat Ohio State. And let's add 365 more days to that going forward. All right, real quick check in on the Cavs. Unfortunate bad news for the Cavs. Colin Sexton underwent season-ending surgery to repair a meniscus slash, you know, like a ligament tear. I thought it was going to be a few-week injury, but unfortunately it was worse than that. And, you know, we wish Colin Sexton the best. He's a great scorer, and it kind of stinks because he was sort of falling into and finding his role with this team. Evan Mobley, obviously the Cavs' top draft pick this year, number 3 overall, very well, was on his way to winning the Rookie of the Year, has suffered a minor elbow, kind of a freak elbow injury. he will miss 2 to 4 weeks. He's already been out for about 2 weeks. So hopefully we can get him back at the beginning of December, get him back in the lineup, get him more acclimated. We'll check in on that. But again, I'm recording this Monday night. They're taking on the Brooklyn Nets right now. We'll see how that goes. Wednesday, Phoenix Suns. Saturday, you got the Orlando Magic. And then next Monday, 1 week from tonight, or well, a week from when the show airs, the Dallas Mavericks. So leading the team this season, you got Darius Garland at 17.8 points a game. Jared rebounded nearly 11 rebounds. You got Darius Garland leading the team in assists at 6.5. Garland also in steals, almost 1.5 a game, and Evan Mobley with blocks, 1.5 blocks per game. So all those players doing a great job. You also got Lauri Markkanen coming back. You have Ricky Rubio just doing a great job as your veteran leader. You got Kevin Love coming off the bench and being a really nice team player this year. So hopefully the Cavs are you know, maybe the couple of these guys getting out can get some of the, you know, your bench more established, and you can, you know, figure it out and be more cohesive as a team once some of your main guys come back. And just a few more notes. First of all, you know, the Indians obviously changed their name to the Cleveland Guardians. That just went into effect this past week. But a former Cleveland Indians legend, Doug Jones, I remember this guy growing up. I was very, very young, but I remember him closing for the Indians and just being a cool guy. I don't think he ever hit more than maybe like 85 miles an hour with a fastball, but the guy could pitch and found out a way to get guys out with a lot of junk. So, but unfortunately he passed away today, and we just say rest in peace to Doug Jones. And then finally, let's end on a little bit more of a lighter note. On this day, 55 years ago, Polk High, a.k.a. Ursuline High School All-City fullback Al Bundy scored 4 touchdowns, including the game winner from 75 yards out, to lead the Panthers, once again, the Irish, to the 1966 City Championship over Andrew Johnson High, which was probably Cardinal Mooney, Rayan, Wilson, Ursuline, Boardman, I don't know. So shout out to Youngstown native Ed O'Neill as Al Bundy. So thanks for listening, guys. We will be back with a Browns show all to itself, with a Buckeyes show all to itself. We appreciate you guys listening. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.